Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. On behalf of the Wyoming Supreme Court's Children's Justice Project, I would like to welcome you to the CJP monthly training series. The training is offered the second Thursday of every month from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. for key stakeholders involved in the Wyoming juvenile court system. We have a great training lined up for you today. To download the materials for today's training, please visit the CJP website at www.courts.state.wy.us/CJP and click on the training tab. If you have questions, please call in during the last 10 minutes of the training. The phone number is 917-889-8064. Again, that number is 917-889-8064. You may also post questions and comments using the chat session on the Blog Talk Radio website. After today's training, please go to the CJP webpage to complete a survey. We hope you find today's training beneficial.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Whitney Agopian, and I'm the Children's Justice Project Coordinator. Thank you for joining us today for the Blog Talk, Dealing with Difficult People. The presenter today is Lisa Finke, a guardian ad litem and parent attorney with Finke Law in Gillette, Wyoming, and she's presenting on dealing with difficult people in the child welfare system in Wyoming. The Blog Talk is going to cover the roles of the parties involved in the child welfare system and the rules that apply to professionals, covering both legal and non-legal expectations. The discussion will include tips on dealing with difficult parents and professionals, focusing on establishing non-confrontational working relationships. The Blog Talk will include information on some common mental health issues and how to best respond to individuals with these diagnoses. Again, you can call in with questions during the last 10 minutes or post your questions in the chat. Go ahead, Lisa.
Thank you, Whitney. I'm glad to be back on Blog Talk to talk about dealing with difficult people today. So today we're talking about dealing with difficult people in child welfare cases, both professionals and non-professionals. We'll start by identifying who's involved in these cases and what their role is. Then we'll talk about who is a difficult person, what causes them to be difficult, and how to work with them. Then we'll spend a little bit of time talking about some specific mental health diagnoses that seem to be the most commonly occurring in child welfare cases and how to work with individuals who have those conditions. Now, dealing with difficult people is a subject that we could probably host a week-long seminar on and give you lots and lots of information, but we only have an hour today, so I'm going to try and cram as much information as I can into the next hour. So let's begin right away by talking about who are the people involved in child welfare cases? Who are the people that we're dealing with? Now, while most of you are probably familiar with child welfare proceedings, it's helpful to review who the key players are and what their roles are. There are more people involved in child welfare legal proceedings than any other type of legal proceedings, so it's important to know who everyone is and what their role is. So let's begin by talking about the judge. In child welfare, the role of the judge is to oversee the juvenile court process to ensure that the proceedings are conducted in accordance with law. The judge has obligations under the Wyoming statutes. The main obligation is to ensure that the paramount goal of the proceeding is the health and safety of the child. Under the Wyoming statutes, the multidisciplinary team, which consists of most of the individuals we'll discuss today, formulates recommendations to present to the judge on how the judge should proceed with the case. However, if there's not an agreement by the MDT as to the recommendations, or if the judge can put in the record his or her reasoning why unanimous recommendations should not be adopted, then the judge is tasked with issuing orders that are in the best interest of the child. Now, judges in Wyoming are required to comply with the Wyoming Code of Judicial Conduct, which requires, among other things, that a judge comply with the law, act with integrity, be impartial and fair, and avoid judgment, bias, and harassment. If anyone is interested in reviewing the Code of Judicial Conduct, it can be downloaded from the Wyoming Supreme Court website, and it has a lot of information pertaining to a judge's role in the court process. The next individual is the prosecutor. Prosecutors are tasked with instituting and prosecuting child welfare proceedings in Wyoming. It's the responsibility of the prosecutor to review referrals from DFS, law enforcement, schools, and community members to determine when a child welfare case should be filed and if a child welfare case is in the best interest of the child and the community. Prosecutors have to make an independent decision to file abuse and neglect proceedings upon evaluation of the evidence. Prosecutors must work with DFS to oversee rehabilitation of the family, yet at the same time must hold DFS responsible for fulfilling its statutory obligations. Prosecutors are attorneys, and they're required to comply with the Wyoming Rules of Professional Conduct. Like the Code of Judicial Conduct, there are a variety of rules under the Code of Professional Conduct which require prosecutors to maintain the integrity and professionalism of the legal community. Prosecutors are also subject to a special rule of professional conduct, Rule 3.8. While Rule 3.8 in the Rules of Professional Conduct states it's applicable to criminal cases, it's likely to be applied in any case in which a prosecutor is overseeing, which would include child welfare cases. Rule 3.8, in a nutshell, requires prosecutors to refrain from prosecuting cases which are not supported by evidence, ensure that the court process is in compliance with law, ensure parties are advised of their rights, and to use caution when dealing with unrepresented parties. It is the responsibility of the judge and the prosecutor to make sure that the parties involved in a child welfare proceeding are advised of their rights and that their rights are protected. Prosecutors are also required to comply with the Uniform Rules of District Courts of the state of Wyoming, which can also be downloaded from the Supreme Court website. Specifically, Rule 801 of the Uniform Rules for District Court applies to not just prosecutors, but any attorney involved in the child welfare system. Rule 801 is a little bit longer. I typically don't like to read rules in presentations like this, but this is a very important rule for attorneys to review and for other people involved in the system to know that attorneys are required to comply with this rule. So I do want to read it today, and I apologize because it is a little long. But Rule 801 says, as one of the learned professions, the practice of law is founded upon principles of fairness, decency, integrity, and honor. Professionalism connotes adherence by attorneys in their relations with judges, colleagues, litigants, witnesses, and the public to appropriate standards of behavior. The District Courts of Wyoming, in furtherance of the inherent power and responsibility of courts to supervise proceedings before them, shall hold attorneys to the following standards of professional behavior. Attorneys shall at all times treat all persons involved in adjudicative proceedings, including litigants, witnesses, other counsel, court staff, and judges, with candor, courtesy, and civility, and demonstrate personal honesty, fairness, and integrity in all of their dealings. An attorney shall at all times be civil and courteous in communicating with all persons involved in the adjudicative process, whether orally or in writing. Attorneys shall at all times extend reasonable cooperation to opposing counsel. Attorneys shall not arbitrarily or unreasonably withhold consent to opposing counsel's request for reasonable scheduling or logistical accommodations, nor shall they condition their cooperation on disproportionate or unreasonable demands. An attorney shall not use any form of discovery or the scheduling of discovery as a means of harassing opposing counsel or counsel's client, and such conduct, in addition to representing a potential violation of the Wyoming Rules of Civil Procedure, shall be deemed a violation of professional standards. Attorneys shall be reasonably punctual in their communications with all persons involved in the adjudicative process and shall appear on time for all duly scheduled events involved in the adjudicative process unless excused or detained by circumstances beyond their reasonable control. When an attorney or an attorney's client or a witness under the reasonable control of an attorney becomes unavailable for a duly scheduled event, then the attorney shall promptly notify opposing counsel and, where appropriate, court reporters, court personnel, and others involved in the event. Attorneys shall not initiate any ex parte communication with a judicial officer concerning any matter pending before the judicial officer unless such communication is expressly authorized by an applicable rule of procedure, a written order issued by the judicial officer, or an agreement between all counsel involved in the pending matter. Attorneys shall confer with opposing counsel and shall endeavor in good faith to resolve disputes before seeking the court's intervention. When the court is required to intervene, the court may render any or all of the following sanctions against the attorney who is found, after notice and opportunity to be heard, to have violated this rule: a formal reprimand, monetary sanctions, such other sanctions as the court deems appropriate. The conduct, demeanor, and dress of attorneys when present in any court proceeding shall reflect respect for the dignity and authority of the court, and the proceedings shall be maintained as an objective search for the applicable facts and the correct principles of law. So there's a little bit more to Rule 801 there, but I'll move on from that. But again, that rule applies to all attorneys working within the court system. So the next party I want to talk about is the Department of Family Services. The Department of Family Services is a statutorily created administrative agency whose mission is to promote the safety, well-being, and self-sufficiency of families through community partnerships. Among the duties of DFS is to cooperate, coordinate, and assist with the prosecution in abuse and neglect cases. DFS workers are tasked with administering the court's orders and monitoring the family's progress. DFS is also responsible for making reasonable efforts to prevent the removal of the child from the home or to reunify the family when the child has been removed. Under the administrative rules for the Department of Family Services, Section 1, Rule 5, Child Protective Service workers must be trained in the area of child abuse and neglect. Only staff who have completed the Child Protective Services certification will be assigned Child Protective Service responsibilities. Completion of the Child Protective Service certification is defined as having attended and passed the basic child abuse and neglect course. However, a new worker may provide Child Protective Services under the supervision of a certified Child Protective Services supervisor and manager. The next group of people within the court system are guardian ad litems, or GALs. Pursuant to federal and state statute, the court is required to appoint counsel for any child in an abuse and neglect proceeding. In Wyoming, the legislature has established the Wyoming Guardian Ad Litem Program to provide GALs for children in abuse and neglect, child in need of supervision, and delinquency proceedings. These GALs are licensed attorneys and are entitled to participate in full courtroom advocacy for their clients. A GAL should be appointed immediately upon the filing of a petition. The GAL is tasked with representing the child's best interests. Because GALs are attorneys in Wyoming, they are also required to comply with the Wyoming Rules of Professional Conduct and the Uniform Rules of the District Court. They have their own policy through the program that they are required to comply with as well. The next group of people involved in the system is respondents. Respondents can include the individuals who are alleged to have abused or neglected the child. This can include parents, guardians, custodians, step-parents, and significant others. They are not bound by any sort of ethical code or rule regarding their behavior. Then you have counsel for the respondents. The court can appoint counsel for any party when necessary in the interest of justice. This includes parents, guardians, custodians, any other person made a party by an order to appear or named by the juvenile court. Counsel for the parties are attorneys and, again, bound by the rules of professional conduct and the uniform rules of the district court. In some areas, you may have court-appointed special advocates or CASAs. These are lay advocates that are appointed to represent the best interests of the child in judicial districts where these programs exist. CASAs are required to comply with Rule 8 of the Wyoming Rules of Procedure for Juvenile Court, which requires them to have successfully completed the screening and training as required by their local CASA agency and as mandated by the National Court-Appointed Special Advocates Association. CASA volunteers are not the legal representative or attorney of the child. They are a lay advocate that advocates on behalf of the child. You can have mental health professionals involved in child welfare proceedings. In Wyoming, mental health disorders can be diagnosed by licensed master's level counselors, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, medical doctors, psychiatrists, and psychologists. Some type of practitioners are more experienced in diagnosing than others all are, but they all are allowed to diagnose. Any of those providers can provide treatment services. Some may be able to prescribe medication, and all can provide counseling services. Now, you can also have substance abuse providers, which are different than mental health providers. They have different requirements and licensing requirements that they have to comply with. Some mental health providers can provide substance abuse treatment, but substance abuse providers cannot provide mental health treatment unless they are specifically licensed to do that. When it comes to mental health providers, they are required to comply with licensing requirements that are put forth by the State of Wyoming Mental Health Professionals Licensing Board, and those requirements can be found on their website. The next group of people I want to talk about are foster parents. Foster parents are individuals that have signed up with the Department of Family Services to provide homes for children who are in the custody of the Department of Family Services. They're required to submit to background screenings and training provided by DFS. They're allowed to attend MDT meetings and court hearings and provide their input. And they are required to comply with standards set forth by the department. You can also have school personnel involved, such as principals, teachers, counselors, IEP coordinators, and others that might be involved with a child in the child welfare system. These individuals are required to comply with the requirements set forth by their school district policies and certain requirements set forth by federal law. Now, those are kind of the main players in the child welfare system. There are, of course, other individuals who may be involved depending on the case, but the individuals that we've talked about so far are who we would call the main players. Now, when it comes to these main players, we work together as a team in juvenile court to come up with the best outcome for a child, but every single person that's a part of a child welfare case comes in with their own ethical obligations, their own position, their own things that they need to advocate for, and oftentimes what each individual is required to advocate for is different than everyone else on the team. And so you get a group of people who are tasked with acting in the best interest of the child and reunifying families, and everyone has different expectations and different goals that they come into the process with. And so oftentimes there's a lot of conflict, and oftentimes we can end up in a situation where you feel like you're working with someone that is incredibly difficult to work with. So for purposes of today, the question is, who is a difficult person? Well, the answer to that question is, it depends. Defining who is and isn't a difficult person to work with is hard because it's a subjective standard. Whether or not someone is a difficult person to work with depends on your perception, not anyone else's, but yours. It's whether or not you think that person is difficult to work with. Everyone has their own standards, their own pet peeves, their own types of personalities that they don't work well with. And so with this subjective standard of what a difficult person is, everybody's going to have a different answer. Now, that being said, there are just some people out there that everyone is going to define as being difficult. Unfortunately, in working with child welfare, you're going to encounter people that just seem to thrive on causing chaos and pushing other people's buttons. Those people are out there. However, difficult people can take many forms, and what is difficult can present in different ways with different people. A difficult person for you may be a coworker that doesn't want to be a team player, an opposing attorney that won't back down from a position you disagree with, or a parent that is just adamant that the system is out to get them, or it can even be a judge who just doesn't seem to appreciate your position. For you, a difficult person may be someone that is passive-aggressive or someone who tries to create more problems than they solve. Ultimately, defining who is a difficult person is your own unique definition. Your coworkers may think that a certain attorney is difficult to work with, but you may have no problems whatsoever working with that attorney. You may think that a certain DFS worker is impossible to get along with, and someone else may love that worker to death. It all depends on your perception. No matter where you go or what you do, you're always going to have to work with people that are difficult. But this is good news, and it's good news because there's only one person in control of your perceptions and your feelings, and that's you. So by changing your perception and learning how to control your emotions and your reactions, you can learn to work with even the most difficult people. So what causes someone to be a difficult person? For the most part, people are not born difficult. In most cases, there's a reason why a person is behaving the way they are. We live in a society with a lot of questioning and blaming and hostility, and those things tend to escalate in highly charged emotional situations, which is what child welfare cases are. And it's not just the parents and the families we work with, it's the other people we work with as well, the professionals. They can become difficult to work with as well. So if you look to overall causes of difficult people in our society right now, some of the main contributing factors are less respect for authority, including judges in the court system, increased anger, increased access to false information, increased cynicism and distrust, people with hidden agendas, and increased stress, worry, and fear. For today, we're going to talk about four reasons why people can become difficult to work with, and those are biological causes, communication causes, emotional causes, and situational causes. Biological causes include mental health and substance abuse issues. Now, we'll talk about mental health in greater depth later on in this talk, so we'll table that for now. But as to substance abuse, many parents involved in child welfare proceedings are suffering from substance abuse disorders. Whether it's alcohol or controlled substances, a parent that chronically struggles with substance abuse may need a significant period of time to stabilize. And during times of use or during those times of stabilization, they can be belligerent or emotional, causing them to be difficult to work with because of what they are going through. These parents can be unorganized. They cannot show up for appointments or meetings. They may relapse very commonly. It's something that causes a lot of frustration to people working with them. Now, substance abuse can also be an issue for professionals as well. You may be working with another professional who is struggling with substance abuse themselves. Working in the child welfare system is stressful, and professionals can develop addiction issues as well. Many of the same frustrations that exist in working with parents who have substance abuse issues can occur when working with professionals who are struggling with their own substance abuse issues as well. Communication causes of difficulty. Lack of clarity, not knowing what's going on, misunderstandings, plain old miscommunication. These are all contributing factors which can cause someone to be difficult to work with. When people are not on the same page, when there's a misunderstanding about what everyone's roles and responsibilities are, it can cause people to become difficult to work with. There's emotional causes for why people become difficult to work with. This can include being angry, being distrustful, being discomfortable, being uncomfortable with the situation, frustration, pain, abuse. These are emotions and things that a lot of people bring into a case, especially parents. They're angry at the system. They don't trust the system. They're frustrated because they don't know what's going on. Child welfare cases are emotionally charged for everyone. Everyone has different expectations and standards, and when those things are pitted against each other, things can get emotionally charged. And emotions are one of the major factors that lead to disputes, not only with parents, but between professionals as well. There are also situational causes as to why someone can become difficult to work with. The three main ones here are stress, limited resources, and power struggles. All of those occur in almost every single child welfare case that you're going to have. Stress because the system is involved with the family. Stress because families are difficult to work with. Not having enough resources in your community. Power struggles between the players on the team. There are definitely situational causes for why someone could become difficult to work with in a child welfare case. So if you're able to step back, take a look at the situation, and understand, kind of the reasons or the causes of the difficulty, why someone has become difficult to work with, you can look towards finding a solution and finding a way to communicate and work with any difficult person. So how do you work with difficult people? Well, there's lots of ways you can approach the situation. It will require some effort from you to find the response to other people's behavior that works for you. Again, we could do a week-long seminar on all the strategies that you can use to work with difficult people, to work with people that you don't get along with. But for today, I'm just going to go through a few suggestions on how to work with difficult people. First, be calm. Losing your temper and making the other person mad is not the way to get them to work with you. When the person you're dealing with sees that you are calm, despite whatever he or she is doing, you're eventually going to get their attention. Two, try to understand where the other person is coming from. For the most part, no one is difficult for the sake of being difficult. There's something motivating them to act the way that they are. Try to identify why the person is acting this way and what you can do to help them resolve that issue. Three, get some perspective from others. Someone you work with has probably encountered a similar situation to what you're dealing with, whether it's with a parent, whether it's with a coworker, whether it's with another player in the system. Somebody's probably got the experience to address that issue. They may be able to see things in a different light or offer you some perspective on what you should do. Four, let the person know where you're coming from. Let the other person know why you are doing or saying what you are. Sometimes the other person may think you're just being difficult with them. And explaining your reasoning to them may help them understand where you're coming from and figure out if there's any miscommunication or misunderstanding occurring. Five, try to build a rapport. Try to connect with the person on a personal or human level. Get to know them as a person. Build real connections and relationships with them. Now, if that means you're working with a client or a parent, it certainly doesn't mean that you have to share your personal life with them, but it can mean using some empathy to try and understand their personal life. Six, always, always, always treat the other person with respect. If you're disrespectful to someone, you shouldn't be surprised when they're disrespectful to you. Always take the high road, maintain respectful communications and boundaries, and always try and act as a professional in everything that you do. Seven, focus on what you can do to resolve the situation. Focus on what you can do and what you can control. If it's a miscommunication issue, maybe it's simply clarifying what's going on with the individual. If it's a lack of resource situation, maybe your agency has the funds or a means to help the person with what they're struggling with. Focus on what you can do and not on what the other person is doing. Eight, ignore. Sometimes when it comes to another person's bad behavior, all you can do is ignore it. You can dwell on what the other person is doing, or you can go about your business and only interact with the person when you need to. This may be a strategy that you have to incorporate when the difficult person you're trying to deal with is a coworker. And nine, don't die on your own sword. If the conflict between you and another person is such that it leads you to fight the kind of battle that leads you as ends up hurting you as much as it hurts them, then it's definitely time to try and find another approach to how to work with this person. Always remember to be aware of your own emotions and keep them in check and choose your battles wisely. I do want to take a little bit of time and specifically talk about working with difficult parents. I like the way that the 0-3 organization phrases working with parents. Parents and children are a 2-for-1 deal. Developing positive relationships with parents is critical to providing the best care possible to their children. So even if you have a positive relationship with a parent, when you're talking about the care of their children, it can often stir up strong feelings. Parents can have strong and justifiable fears about their children developing a stronger bond with a foster parent, a CASA advocate, a GAL, or a DFS worker than the child has with their parent. They can have a real fear that they're never going to see their children again. They can have a real fear that their children are going to come back from foster care different than they were before. That is a legitimate and honest fear that parents have, and it needs to be recognized in order to work with them effectively. When communicating with difficult parents, it's important to recognize your own feelings and keep them separate from the conversation. When working with parents in the child welfare system, we should try to establish partnerships with those parents to improve the quality of care their children are receiving. Ask for the parent's perspective, look for compromises, check in with the parent on a regular basis to get their perspective on how things are going, not just checking in because the case requires you to do so, but checking in to genuinely find out how they feel like things are going. there is one thing that I want to make very, very, very clear. Working with difficult people, both professional and non-professional, comes with the territory in working in child welfare, but violence and threats and aggression are never, ever, ever appropriate, and you do not have to put up with threats of violence, violence, or aggressive behavior. Your safety is always paramount. If this type of behavior comes from another professional, report it immediately to their supervisor or their licensing board. If it's from a parent you're working with, report it immediately to your supervisor and the prosecutor on the case. Working with difficult people comes with the territory in doing the jobs that we do, but none of us are ever required to put ourselves at risk for our jobs. So always remember safety first. Now I want to spend a little bit of time talking about mental health issues because they do tend to be a huge part of child welfare cases. Some professionals can have mental health disorders that would affect your ability to work with them. But for today and talking about working with people with mental health disorders, we're going to be talking about usually working with parents or respondents that have mental health issues. A lot of parents who are involved in abuse and neglect proceedings, child welfare proceedings, are struggling with some sort of mental health issue, such as temporary depression or another mental health diagnosis. Child welfare proceedings can bring about mental health disorders. A lot of parents can get depressed if they lose their children. Many of the parents that we work with have never received or are not currently receiving any medical or psychological or psychiatric treatment for those issues. And so we're dealing with people in the midst of a mental illness that aren't getting the treatment that they should receive. So mental health disorders are diagnosed using the DSM-5. It's a treatise on mental health and diagnosis that sets forth criteria used by mental health providers to determine what specific mental health disorder a person is presenting with at the time of evaluation. The provider interviews the individual. They may administer some screening tools. The result of the interview and the assessment are then cross-referenced with the DSM-5 to determine a diagnosis. Diagnosis is subjective, and it's possible to have different providers giving different diagnoses. There's approximately 297 different diagnoses in the DSM-5. Of course, it's impossible to become familiar with all of those. However, I focused on the five that I personally have seen the most often in child welfare cases. So the first one I want to talk about is bipolar disorder. Individuals with bipolar disorder may have frequent mood swings going from depression to mania. They can be grandiose and overconfident. They may be frequently sad and require very little sleep. They can be impulsive and moody, and they can often be confused and inattentive. When you're working with individuals with bipolar disorder, you should avoid being accusatory or critical. They will not have the ability to analyze their behavior or their problems. You should make positive requests for change, remain calm at all times, and try to find positive praises to include in the conversation. Bipolar individuals will want to negotiate a compromise with you when they disagree with you every time. The second mental illness I want to talk about is schizophrenia. These are individuals that suffer from delusions, hallucinations, and disorganized thinking. They may be extremely disorganized. They can show a lack of emotions. They may neglect their personal hygiene and be withdrawn. When working with these individuals, you should use simple directions. You should work closely with a mental health professional to recognize when these individuals are not at their best. You should understand that these clients are not always able to grasp reality, and you may need to continually remind them of what they need to do. The next mental health illness is antisocial personality disorder. These individuals may appear very charismatic and charming, but they will frequently lie. They can be manipulative and impulsive. They have no regard for safety and lack of loyalty in relationships. They can be easily agitated and can get aggressive. They disregard the rules and have a lack of remorse. They do not learn from negative consequences. When working with these individuals, you should keep the conversations fact-based and should not deviate from relevant case-based information. You should verify everything the individual reports to confirm that it's true. Next, we have borderline personality disorder. These individuals may be unstable in their self-image and emotions. They may be impulsive and engage in risky behaviors. They often struggle with separation and rejection. They may show intense fear of abandonment and display inappropriate anger. When stressed, they can be paranoid. When working with these individuals, you should try to be sympathetic and make the individual feel like they are being heard. You should stay calm at all times, even if the client is acting out emotionally. You need to immediately set boundaries with these people, or they will have no boundaries whatsoever. If the individual is upset about a certain situation, you should delay talking with them about the issue. These individuals may try to blame issues on everyone else, so you should be firm and clear in your communications so that they can't come back and twist your words around. The last one here I want to talk about is narcissistic personality disorder. These individuals may present as grandiose and believe that they are incredibly important. They tend to believe they are successful and powerful. They may believe they are special and demand to be treated as such. They often have a sense of entitlement and lack of empathy for others. They can be arrogant, and they believe that they are always right. When working with someone with narcissistic personality disorder, you should find ways to provide positive recognition. You should avoid challenging the client. Communications should be precise and clear. You should explain to the individual how things will benefit them and make them look good. So that concludes a brief discussion on the mental health issues, which leads me to the last topic I want to discuss today. Everyone's heard the saying that everything you need to know in life you learned in kindergarten. Well, I happen to think that everything you need to know in life you can learn from Sesame Street. And there's a song from Sesame Street that sometimes runs through my head whenever I encounter someone that I think is being difficult or someone that I think is just incredibly hard to work with, being unreasonable, just making my life crazy. It's a song sung by Grover, and it's called Monster in the Mirror. Sometimes when I'm working with someone who I think is difficult, one certain line from that song jumps into my head, and it goes like this. If your mirror has a monster in it, do not shout. This kind of situation does not call for freaking out. And do nothing that you would not like to see him do, because the monster in the mirror, he just might be you. So sometimes, whether we like to acknowledge it or not, the difficult person to deal with is us. Sometimes it may seem like everybody else is being unreasonable, and everybody else thinks that we're the one that's being unreasonable. So how do we go about recognizing when we're being the difficult one, and what do we do to quit causing everyone else around us misery? One of the key factors in this line of work that can lead someone to become a difficult person in their professional role is stress. Working in the child welfare system, no matter what role you play, is stressful. Studies have actually shown that over time, stress can have a negative, lasting impact on your brain and change the way that your brain works. And working with difficult people, working in the child welfare system, being stressed out can drive your brain into a stressed out state that turns you into the difficult person. Add into that the stress of managing our own lives, our own emotions, our own finances, careers, families, etc., and our stress levels can skyrocket. Child welfare work also brings with it the risk of caretaker fatigue, secondary trauma, things that there's been a lot of training and education on over the last few years. But in short, our emotional and mental state can get to the point where we may not be able to do our jobs without bringing our own baggage, opinions, and beliefs to the table, making us the difficult person to work with. So we need to find a way to do what we do, working with the people that we work with, without stressing ourselves out to the point of chaos in our own lives. We need to learn how to set limits and boundaries, engage in self-care, build a support system, manage our own emotions. We don't have enough time today to go over how to do that, the best way to do that, resources for that, but it is something that I encourage all of you to look into. Now, when I train and when I present and when I talk about child welfare law, I always like to refer to juvenile court as a team sport. The way the system is designed is meant to take all of these players, all with different opinions, all with different obligations, all with different positions, put them together and have them work as a team to come up with the best outcome for a family. The ultimate goal in child welfare is to have your team in your case function like an NFL team that has just won the Super Bowl, where everybody knows their job, everybody does it, everybody respects everyone else's position, and you come up with the best outcome. But unfortunately, in child welfare, there will be those cases and those situations where your team ends up looking more like a middle school volleyball team, where everybody's more worried about stealing someone else's boyfriend than they are about winning the game. That's what we don't want. And so we've got to learn to work together as a team. I tell people this is not like the reality TV show Survivor. We're not trying to vote somebody off the island. We're trying to learn how to develop professional working relationships with other professionals, with our clients, with families, with children, to do what is best for the family. And so you do need to learn strategies on how to deal with difficult people, how to deal with people that are going through challenging situations in their life. But you also need to learn how to manage your own emotions, manage your stress level, and keep yourself in a place where you can effectively do your job. And so I cruised through this information very quick because I was afraid I wasn't going to have enough time to present today. But that actually wraps it up, unless, Whitney, we have any questions.
Thank you, Lisa. I see a few people on the phone, so I'm going to go ahead and open up the phone line. If you have questions, please feel free to speak up. And I do have one question here. So, Lisa, if you're interested in having more information on this topic, do you have any resources you can suggest?
There's lots of resources online that you can look into. There's one particular article, Whitney, that I'm going to email to you and have you add to the materials for this matter. It's working with families in child welfare and working with difficult families. It's a great article that I found dealing with conflict and working with families in child welfare cases. I'll email you that article so that you can put it up on the website. I actually, when I present on this topic, I use a lot of books that are designed for educators and working with parents within the school system. Because there's a lot of resources out there for teachers and educators on working with difficult parents. And I think it's a very similar situation to child welfare. It's a group of professionals that spend a lot of time working with the children, have to interact with the parents, have some conflict with the parents. So I think that, you know, some of those educational materials are great resources. There's also lots of personnel manuals out there about dealing with difficult coworkers. But really the greatest resource is going to be anything that helps you figure out how you respond to stressful situations and how to take care of your own emotions and your own stress level so that you are reacting to situations appropriately.
Great, thank you. And one other question, do you happen to have an example of a specific situation where you dealt with a difficult person? Can you tell us what you did? And if you don't, that's okay.
You know, I've dealt with a lot of parents with mental health disorders, specifically borderline personality disorder. But with borderlines, you have to spend a lot of time developing a relationship with them. You have to spend a lot of time just letting them kind of air out all their complaints and concerns and letting them talk. I do have one specific situation where it was a client that actually had narcissistic personality disorder that up to that point had had a real difficult time working with anybody else. And true to the form of narcissistic personality disorder, they like to think that they're important. They like to think that they know what's going on and believe that they're always right. So I had this client that had narcissistic personality disorder. She knew she had narcissistic personality disorder. She told me she had narcissistic personality disorder. And so I had her make a list for me of how should I deal with someone with narcissistic personality disorder? And she actually sat down and wrote out a list of how I should work with her to get a good response out of her. And because she thought she was an expert on narcissistic personality disorder, she actually gave me a really good list, and I used everything on it, and I never had problems with her again. And so while that is kind of something specific to narcissistic personality disorder, I think it could be extrapolated to other parents that you work with as well. Ask them how to work with them. If the relationship you have isn't working, if you're not able to communicate with them, you're not able to work with them, ask them how they want you to interact with them, and oftentimes what they give you is going to be the best piece of advice that you can get.
Thank you, Lisa. That's great advice. With that, unless we have any other callers that have a question, I don't see anything else in the chat. Thank you for your time, Lisa, and thank you everyone for tuning in today for this blog talk. Happy holidays.